Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, City A fan. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Milan tear up the form book and make a huge statement in the title race, while Inter rediscover their form and bow out of Europe with heads held high, except for Alexis Sanchez, who loses his. We'll discuss that, Jordan Pickford's birthday, and all the rest of the action in this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to the pod. Another week of potentially season-defining games, both domestically and in Europe. So there's a fair amount to get through. But before we get to that, Mr. Sacchetti in Tel Aviv, you're back with us. How are you doing and what have you been up to this week?
I'm doing pretty well. I've not been up to much besides getting very angry at my neighbors who hopefully don't listen to this podcast. But essentially, they left a rubbish bag outside of the door for about 6 days. And I mean, I don't mind them leaving it there for a couple of hours and then dropping it off when they leave the house. But this particular bag was there for quite a while. And when I bumped into one of these neighbors on the stairs the other day, I asked him if they were running some sort of art project or a science experiment, at which point this bag disappeared immediately. Maybe listeners can tell me if I was too rude or something. I don't know.
I don't know, but I like the fact that you're using the podcast as a kind of agony ant place.
Yeah, also personal vendettas.
yeah, great stuff. And have you got a beer this week?
I'm rocking that Beavertown vibe we had in the last episode, and I'm having a neck oil this week.
Oh, I'm very jealous. Neck oil, my favorite beer in the world. Enjoy it. I have got myself I've just gone for the boring, reliable center back, as Oscar called it, the Brewdog Dead Pony Club. And yeah, not really got much to report this week. It's been okay. It's not been bad. So let's get into the action. We'll start with the European action because as we record, the Atalanta game has just finished, so we've had a full midweek of European action for Italian clubs. We'll start with the Inter though, because Champions League, obviously. They bow out after an encouraging performance against Liverpool. Boaz, lots of positives to take from this one.
Yeah, definitely Inter can bow out with their heads held up high. Although maybe they will have a couple of regrets looking back over the two ties. They definitely gave Liverpool a good game. And especially in the first leg, they probably did not deserve to lose, at least not by a two-goal margin. Obviously, Liverpool are a much more seasoned team. The players are slightly older and they have a slightly bigger profile. And I think this will be a great lesson for the younger players in the Inter squad. But as I said, maybe a few regrets for the Alexis Sanchez red card, for example.
Mm.
And also maybe in this particular leg, I understand that they were down to 10 men for much of the second half. But nonetheless, there was a feeling that maybe they could have gone for it a little bit more. Also, eyebrows, of course, were raised that Edin Dzeko didn't come on the pitch, but I think that was more to do with the fact that Inter have a tendency to lump it up front when he's on the pitch, and obviously with Van Dijk being the centre-back for Liverpool, probably not the best tactic. So Inzaghi opted to bring on another midfielder and kind of try and play the ball out of trouble, but let's not forget that despite the positive result, that Liverpool did hit the woodwork, and as I said, Liverpool are a much more seasoned team and did deserve to go through, but Inter gave a good showing of themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I was particularly impressed with Vidal's performance, to be honest. Vidal at his very best, combative best, I thought. I think Skriniar actually ended up getting the Man of the Match award. But let's talk about that Alexis Sanchez sending off. I mean, I saw it and I thought, what are you doing? Silly boy. But I mean, in the UK, the pundits after the game were suggesting that it was actually harsh because, I mean, he did get the ball beforehand. So I guess a good place to start with this is, was it a sending off for you? Was it a second yellow for you?
So first of all, I would probably argue that his first yellow card was maybe more of a red card to begin with, an orange at best.
An orange, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was already walking quite a tight rope, and the way modern football is evolving, you just can't follow through anymore, especially like that. He did get the ball, but he does put the opposing player in kind of in danger, and more to the point, it's right after they've scored the goal.
Yeah.
Maybe a cooler head, especially considering he's one of the... Yeah. quote-unquote veterans of the team, a cooler head would probably win better.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you could have said it all there. It looked like it was a hot-headed lunge. And to be honest, he wasn't really in full control, was he? He did get to the ball. He did poke it away from the defender. But, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you just can't do that, really, in the modern game. And the timing, I think, probably... didn't work in his favor either. After that goal, there was kind of a sense that they were kind of riled up and you know, rearing to go, chomping at the bit. So maybe made it look even more reckless than it was. But anyway, yeah, Inter go out of Europe disappointing, as that leaves only Juve in the Champions League now for at least one more week. But I agree, they got out with their heads held high. I think both of us were kind of expecting Liverpool to pretty much walk all over them, as a lot of pundits in Italy were saying wouldn't happen. So
you mentioned Vidal earlier on, and you also kind of alluded to Skriniar. I have to say that Brozovic again was phenomenal, and possibly him and Skriniar were the two players who could kind of slot into the Liverpool side, in my opinion. And him going off slightly injured, although the current reports are suggesting that it's not too bad an injury, should have Inter fans worried, because he's a one-of-a-kind player, and especially under Conte, and now even under Inzaghi, he's he's really improved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that run that Inter were on earlier, a couple of weeks back, kind of coincided with him being missing for a couple of games.
Before we move on, I may be contradicting myself a little bit, because I've said throughout the season that I think that Inter probably have the best out-and-out team in the league. But it felt a little bit yesterday that with the likes of Gagliardini, Vidal, who did play well, but still he's not peak Barella, let's say, and Vecino on the pitch. Maybe their midfield is a little bit short on talent, or at the very least young talent, someone that can come in and make a difference.
Yeah, when Barella's out, as he was.
And perhaps now is the time to question the decision to send Cincy on loan to Sampdoria.
Yeah, very, very good point. Right, let's move on to the other European action, because as we record on Thursday night, Roma got a useful 1-0 victory away to Vitesse in the UEFA Conference League to take into the second leg. Mourinho said they got lucky tonight. I mean, I have to say, from my point of view, I watched quite a long part of the first half, but had parenting duties, so didn't actually get to see the end of the game. But, I mean, the pitch was an absolute mess. The players were kind of... The ground was giving way beneath their feet. The ball like was bobbling all over the place. So I think mitigating circumstances for me, perhaps. But Boaz, this is actually quite an impressive run that Roma are on. That's 3 wins in a row, 7 risultati utili, or games undefeated in Serie A. And yeah, I guess that probably does mean that we need to speak about their 1-0 win at the weekend against Atalanta as well.
Yeah, you were very riled by this result, and justifiably so, because the Roma had something like 34% possession at home. But nonetheless, the tactics appear to be working, and this kind of bunker mentality that Mourinho is so famous for is kind of transpiring in this latter half of the season. It's funny once again to stress the fact that for these last 2 games, Mourinho has not even been pitch side, and suddenly Roma are picking up great points against teams that they would otherwise lose against. But I'm not sure they have the momentum to continue this path. And I mean, we'll see. Their squad is definitely not as good as some of the other teams in Serie A, but strange things have happened. Specifically for today's game, I just wanted to highlight Sergio Oliveira, who pretty much was involved in all the main bits of the game. He scored the goal and then got sent off 10 minutes before the end of the game. So good on him for...
An eventful game.
For yeah, him. Yeah. He was constantly in the ref's book.
Yeah. I mean, you said I was frustrated by that game at the... or riled by that game at the weekend. I think in the, you know, in retrospect, having had a few days to calm down, it was just frustration, really, because, I mean, Atalanta could not find a way through. It has to be said, yes, they had all of that possession. I'm sure they had the vast majority of the territory as well, although I haven't actually seen the stats for that. But they just really, really couldn't find a way through. I think there was only one point where, I believe it was Freuler, managed to kind of get through one-on-one, but wasn't able to finish it off. There were some sort of questionable moments. There was the Tammy Abraham challenge on Demiral, which Demiral obviously posted an image of on Instagram afterwards, saying, "What is this?" with, you know, his leg with stud marks in it, basically. In retrospect, I can kind of see why that was not given as a red card, but it was definitely, you mentioned the Alexis Sanchez first challenge in the Inter game against Liverpool being orange. That was very, very definitely an orange card if ever there was one. I think he only just about got away with it because you could argue that he just didn't react quickly enough. But yeah, I think it's fair to have some grievances, but ultimately Atalanta didn't create enough. And Roma just were absolutely rock solid.
Atalanta are going through a kind of a rough patch. This was their third defeat in the last five games. And with the exception of that 4-0 victory against Sampdoria, they haven't been particularly shining. Obviously, a big caveat is the fact that Zapata is missing up front. And I mean, any team would miss a player of his quality and also his particular skill set. But at the same time, maybe this is a slight damning statement to Gasperini's choice of having such a small squad. And in times when everyone's healthy, it works. But at times like this, maybe... what's the name of that Dutch striker that they had last season who's out on loan this year?
Lammers, Sam Lammers.
For example, he would have probably done the job right now.
Yeah, although I think he started quite well on loan at Eintracht Frankfurt and then kind of quickly fell out of the running. So maybe there's more to that than kind of meets the eye, really. But yeah, I mean, yes, Zapata is a big and obvious miss, but also, I mean, Atalanta have had all sorts of injury and suspension problems in defence. And I mean, Gasperini's kind of even had to change to back four at times. So, I mean, yeah, perhaps paying the price for having that sort of smaller nucleus of better players, which I think is what Gasperini was kind of going, trying to maximize the resources. But it's paid off for him in, you know, the last few seasons. So, yeah, perhaps just this season, perhaps maybe just one too far. But you mentioned that Atalanta's poor run of form, and they have been. It's been very, very patchy. But with the result tonight, which we'll get on to speak about now, they've actually now won three of their last four competitive games. It just so happens that two of those have been in Europe. But yeah, tonight they beat Bayer Leverkusen 3-2. I mean, this was a really great open game, albeit with some highly questionable defending from both sides, but particularly from Bayer Leverkusen. But Malinovsky and Muriel were particularly impressive, which may go some way to answering that question, that point that you made about being without a striker. If Muriel can find his form again, then, you know, he can be absolutely devastating as he was tonight. It's just that he kind of ran into a sticky patch right at the time when Zapata was out injured and then got injured himself. So if he's back, then that's can only be good news. But yeah, on tonight's game, I think Atalanta probably be a bit disappointed that they didn't win by more. They probably should have had another goal or two. So yeah, the tie remains very much open heading into the second leg in Germany. Right, we've mentioned some of last weekend's action with that that game that shall not be mentioned again. But undoubtedly, Boaz, this is your moment to shine. The Napoli-Milan game was a huge game at the weekend. And Boaz, predictably, the opposite of what we suspected was going to happen actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, Milan were very impressive in a match that was a great advert for Serie A as a whole. It was end-to-end stuff, to the extent that when I arrived at work the next day, people who don't usually watch Italian football were coming up to me and saying, wow, what a fantastic game. That was a lot of fun. And I was surprised by that, but kind of pleased, because I feel that this is the kind of match that Serie A should be beaming around the world to show that it's now it's a fun league. But anyways, back to the game. Once again, Giroud got an all-important goal. And additionally, it's his first goal away from San Siro, I believe, it's in this season. So a milestone all around. But Milan were very dominant, and Pioli's tactics were spot on. He switched things around a little bit. He played a 4-1-4-1, which threw Napoli off and didn't let their ball players have much time on the ball, which, as I said, they looked a little bit frazzled. That being said, Osimhen was always a thorn in the side, but the young Kalulu for Milan was very impressive as the center back next to Tomori, and that's a pairing that will be interesting in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Osimhen there. Obviously, one of the things that Spalletti was slightly aggrieved that Osimhen didn't get a penalty, which I feel actually probably was a fair shout. But I also feel that Milan had a fair shout as well, with Bennacer going down. So I don't know. I don't know how you feel, Buzz, about that. But you might disagree with me.
Both coaches were suffering from slight nearsightedness, let's say. They both said something along the line, especially Spalletti, but Pioli also alluded to the fact that my penalty was more of a penalty than their penalty, pretty much.
I didn't actually see that, but I like that that happened.
Yeah, I mean, Spalletti was particularly vocal about this, but Pioli also had a sly dig at this. But in any case, I would have probably given them both, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's just yet another example of VAR not being used correctly, really.
And this is a ref that likes to play it an inglese, as they like to say, and maybe a little bit of ego means that he doesn't really like to check VAR too often. It's his style, and this will always happen. Different referees are referee in different ways, and it just so happens that this match in particular was refereed by a guy who doesn't particularly like to whistle.
Yeah. And in terms of the title race, it's so hard to call this season, really, because anytime we think the momentum is with one club, it completely shifts. So, Boaz, we're moving into the final quarter of the season. Any idea where this is going?
I mean, it's always a pleasure to be recording this podcast with my club at the top of the league, albeit Inter still have a game in hand. I do still feel that Inter will probably pip Milan at the end of the season. I think that I keep saying this, but I think that Napoli have a slightly tougher set of results coming up, set of games coming up. We'll see if they get through that, then it's going to be a very interesting season. I can't remember a season where there have been three clubs battling it out so closely. And let's not forget that Atalanta and Juventus are not far off either, although, as we mentioned last week, probably a little bit too far off to be in the Scudetto running.
Yeah, I'd say so. Right, so looking to the weekend ahead, we've got Torino-Inter or Verona-Napoli are probably the pick of the games at the top of the table this week, while Spezia-Cagliari is a big game in the battle against the drop. Boaz, any thoughts on any of those?
So I think there's some interesting narrative in all three of those games. I think since we've just spoken about Napoli, I think probably worth dwelling a little bit more in Verona-Napoli, which in my mind, although it's probably not is not a highly marketable game, it's going to be a fantastic game, both in terms of the players on the pitch, but also the mentality of the two coaches. Verona are having a fantastic season.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, they have the fourth best point tally in 2022, just behind Juve, Napoli, and Milan. And also they've scored the most goals in Serie A in this period. So the fans there must be having a great time. And Napoli obviously just come off this defeat, but also they've not beaten Verona in the last three games. So we could say that Verona are a slight bogey team. And you can remember, if you can throw your mind back to the last game of the season last year, Napoli, all the Napoli needed to do was beat Verona to get to the Champions League. And of course, they drew that game. So there's maybe a little bit of history building up in this game. But it's one I'll be very excited to watch, and I hope that it'll be a good game.
Mm. And Torino, Inter, Spezia, Cagliari?
On paper, Torino should be a tough challenge for Inter. But when you look underneath the hood a little bit, you see that Inter have won the last five games against Torino, scoring an average of 2.6 games a game.
It's almost like you were prepared for this, Buzz.
Yeah. And also, Torino are going through a little bit of a rough patch. They haven't won at home in the last three games, which is their worst run since Giampaolo, who is now not doing amazing things at Sampdoria, was the manager. So although, as I said, on paper, this was supposed to be a tough game, I think Inter, particularly with that Salernitana result and also the good performance against Liverpool, I think they should probably get the 3 points against Torino. We'll see what happens, but it'll be an interesting game as well. Great clash of ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing to say about the Spezia Cagliari game probably is we're moving into that stage of the season now where, well, as Alex Ferguson used to call it, squeaky bum time. They're both sitting just above the relegation spot. Cagliari had, until this weekend, obviously been on great form, as we've spoken about. Spezia less so. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Right, let's move on to best of the rest then, starting with Fiorentina, who have now presented those plans that we spoke about last week for the redevelopment of the Artemio Franchi. I don't know if you saw any of this, Boaz, but there was this competition for who was going to get to design the stadium, and it was the most epic thing that I've ever seen. It was about 2 hours long. It was... there were interviews with Batistuta was there and various sort of former players. But yeah, the design that emerged victorious has kind of divided opinion. But I've got to say, from a personal point of view, I am not I'm not an expert in architecture. But I think with the constraints of keeping the existing stadium, which, I mean, it does seem a little bit ridiculous, really, although, very nice stadium of its time. But I think the architects have actually done a good job, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it finished and in use in Serie A.
It's interesting because the mayor of Florence, who I seem to reference quite a lot on this podcast, bizarrely, but
he has his run-ins with Comiso so often.
It's interesting because he drew comparisons with the Stadio Flaminio in Rome, which is also kind of a protected structure or one of these heritage sites, and therefore the choice was made not to knock it down, and it pretty much sits empty throughout the year, which is a great shame. So, I mean, the way this project works, at the very least, it gets over this hurdle.
Yeah. And I think because we mentioned it last week, because it's got these funds from the European Recovery Fund, it should, or it has to be completed in the next 4 years, which would be lightning speed by Italian Stadia Development.
It sounds like a challenge on Football Manager, like complete stadium in 4 years. And
yeah. Right. Let's move on to Juventus, where Dybala contract talks have been postponed again, fueling those growing rumours that he may leave in the summer. There's a lot of paper talk at the weekend in the Gazzetta, for example, that it looks like he's on his way to Inter, but Atleti, Barca and Spurs are all also being linked with a move. Elsewhere, Fiducci have announced that from 2023, Adidas will take over from Puma as a technical sponsors or kit providers to the Azzurri. So don't know about you, Boaz, but I'm really looking forward to that. I love a good Adidas kit.
Yeah, that really excites me. I hope it's not one of their copy-paste designs, but rather something a little bit more unique to Italy. But Adidas kits are always a bit fancy. I have to say my favorite Italy kit are probably the kit they wore for the 98 World Cup, I believe it was. It was a Nike top. And also the obviously the kit they wore for the 2006 World Cup, more for sentimental reasons, although I do own that shirt. It's a fantastic shirt.
Yeah, it is a fantastic shirt. Right, so Venezia have lost their appeal against playing the match versus Salernitana. So basically, I've made a bit of a bodge job of explaining that there, but this game was originally scheduled to go ahead on the 6th of January, but was postponed due to a COVID outbreak at the Campania side. Venezia took to the field, as we've seen ridiculously too many times in Italy.
Pantomime.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously no game happened and they were hoping to be awarded the 3 points, but it's now been ruled that the game will have to go ahead. So yeah, bad news for Venezia, that really, in their battle against the drop, because I'm sure they could have done with those 3 points.
Yeah, you have to feel for Venezia, because back in January, Salernitana were a little bit of a shit show, and now they've, okay, they just lost to Inter by a big margin, but overall they have a new manager, some new players in, it's a slightly different side. So you'd argue that Venezia probably would have been better off playing in January.
Yeah, good point. Very, very good point. Right, staying in the relegation zone, relegation threatened Genoa, now undefeated in 6, though also without a league win since September. So, Boaz, to steal your joke, the new manager is a mixed blessing. And before you have any opportunity to respond to that, we're going to move on to good week, bad week, Boaz. So let's start with good week, as we normally do. I would say the three main contenders this week are Milan and Roma, for obvious reasons we've spoken about, or Lazio for their thumping win against an informed Cagliari. Do you agree with those nominations, and who would you pick?
I'm a little bit biased this week, but with Milan going top, it's a good chance to give them a good week. That being said, Roma don't often get mentioned in the good week column, particularly not in the last season or so. And with 2 wins in the week, maybe the pendulum swings a little bit closer to them.
Yeah, my vote goes to Roma.
I'll give it to Roma. I'm happy with that.
Great. So good week, Roma, and bad week. So you mentioned Salernitana losing 5-0 to Inter. I think they've got to be in the running. We mentioned Venezia as well, but they followed up last week's 3-1 defeat to Verona with a 4-1 defeat to Sassuolo. And I guess the other candidate, Cagliari, losing 3-0 to Lazio, as we just mentioned as well. Those would be my nominations. Again, who would you go for? Do you agree with the nominations?
I agree. Can we give it to Venezia in back-to-back weeks, or is that a little bit harsh?
I think it's a bit harsh.
And, I mean, losing to Lazio is not such a... I mean, it sucks because Cagliari are chasing... are trying to not get relegated, but at the same time, there's no disrespect to lose to Lazio, particularly with Ciro Immobile in such good form. So that just leaves, as a process of elimination, that leaves one team for us.
Or I suppose we could go for Napoli as well. Just throw it into the ring as kind of a wild card.
I do feel that Napoli, although Milan did play better, I feel that Napoli put on a good show, and they have some splendid players. And
yeah.
I don't think they deserve a bad week, especially not this week.
Okay, so we're undecided between Salernitana and Cagliari, are we?
Yeah, I think it's let's flip a coin, basically.
Okay, I'm going to go just because of the quality of the opposition, and you're right, Lazio are not a bad side at all, but I think Cagliari will be disappointed given the run of form they were in. Salernitana, the bottom side, losing to the champions 5-0. I'm going to go for Cagliari, I think. Reluctantly, okay. Going for Cagliari for bad week.
Perfect.
Cool. So we're going good
well,
week.
Well, not Roma. Perfect. Very sad for them.
Imperfect. Very imperfect. Good week, Roma, and bad week, Cagliari. Right. And on that note, Boaz, it's time for your theme tune and keeping up with the Italians.
Fantastic. So Carlo Ancelotti's Real Madrid came back from being 2-0 down on aggregate to get a stupendous win against serial bottlers PSG. In the same game, Donnarumma was largely to blame for Real Madrid's opening goal, which basically turned the game on its head. And it has to be said, he's had fewer games this season than Zlatan has, despite the latter being injured a lot of the time. Over in England, Antonio Conte continues to win one game, lose one game, win one game, lose one game. And this time, his Tottenham side smashed relegation-threatened Everton 5-0. In Germany, Daniel Caligiuri scored a very late winner against Armenia for Augsburg. And Fernando Forestieri, who you might remember I mentioned a few weeks ago, has moved to Malaysia, scored his first goal for his new club, Johor. Stefano Makkopi is the new manager for Bulgarian side FC Tsarco Selo. And across the border in Romania, goalkeeper Mirko Pliacelli kept his third clean sheet in a row. Moving swiftly to Turkey, whom we haven't mentioned in a while. So thanks to Stefano Kaka, who rescued a point for his side and got to double figures for the first time in a few seasons. Elsewhere in Turkey, Andrea Bertolacci got off the mark for his new club, Kayserispor. And lastly, my good friend Gianluca Festa, who just last week we reported had left his post for Apollon Smyrnis, has just rocked up with a fellow Greek club, Lamia. So good luck to him and look forward to reporting more about his results there.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that we haven't nicknamed him Johnny Party. Yeah, but
good.
But there we go. Right. Thank you very much for that, Boaz. Let's move on to the honourables and dishonourables section. I'm going to start with an honourable for Milan and England, Tomori, for his, I believe it was a post-match interview that he gave entirely in Italian. And just, I mean, he made a couple of mistakes, but it's impressive how well he's speaking after just 1 year. And it's an honourable for, you know, picking up the language and really kind of throwing himself into Italian football, really. He seems to be absolutely loving his time.
And I'm not sure if you saw the tweet he tweeted out afterwards. He responded to the journalist who had originally mentioned this interview in Italian, saying, "I'm doing my best," or something along those lines. But again, the fact that he's going out there and he's making an effort is really appreciated.
Yeah, yeah. Right, Boaz, you've got an honourable for Regione Liguria.
This kind of follows up on a story we told a couple of weeks ago, where you might remember that Dumfries was seriously reprimanded by some of his teammates for putting chicken in his pesto pasta.
We will never forget.
Rightfully so. But the Regione Liguria was very quick to act, and they sent him a food ambassador kit, which involved includes wine and pesto and pasta, and they told him expressly not to put the chicken in his pesto. So, I mean, if anything, Dumfries's spell in Italy will always be remembered for this one culinary act of aggression.
Yeah, good on them. Well done. Right, I've got a dishonourable, and it kind of breaks my heart a little bit, but I'm giving a dishonourable to Martin Darun for his red card at the end of Roma-Atalanta. Similar situation to the one we mentioned with Jack Bonaventura the other week, where he was booked for, I mean, probably was a bookable offence, but turned around, obviously frustrated in absolute rage, and gave the referee an earful and proceeded to be immediately shown the second yellow and sent off. And the reason I'm doing this is to show that we tried to be balanced and even-handed, because I think after giving Bonaventura one, I couldn't get away with not giving Martin Darun one for doing exactly the same thing.
In typical Darun fashion, he then released a funny tweet about the red card.
Of course. So, yeah. Self-deprecative tweet as well. So, yeah. Great. And Boaz, you've got an honourable for Valdecaita.
Yeah, a few months ago, a documentary came out in Spain called Hermanos. It tells the story of Keita Balde while he was still playing for Monaco last season or two seasons ago. And essentially, he collected food, clothes, and often money for a group of Senegalese immigrants who were living on the outskirts of Barcelona. And because of their legal status, they couldn't exactly work. So essentially, he provided for them. And this documentary shone a light on this particular problem. And he's been praised by media and politicians in Spain. So, I mean, this is a good chance but for us to praise him as well. And kudos for a great act.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I'm going to give my goals honorable now. And it's going to go to Felipe Anderson. I think there weren't that many sort of really spectacular wow goals, I don't think, this weekend. But Felipe Anderson's was great to put Lazio 3-0 up against Cagliari. He kind of took on about three or four defenders and then just really composed finish at the end of it. So lovely goal. And I think that's got to be goal of the week. Boaz, you've got an honorable for Atalanta fans.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned quite in depth in our last episode about the situation between Miranchuk and Malinovsky at Atalanta and the fact that they're actually really good friends. And obviously, neither of them are to blame for what's happening between their two countries. But in any case, the Atalanta fans brought out a really nicely drawn banner with the two players kind of holding hands. And I believe there was like a peace sign next to it. And it's just a nice act and a great show of support for both guys who, as I just said, yeah, don't really have a bearing in what's happening.
Yeah, there is a really nice show of unity that we're seeing at Atalanta, isn't it? The fans, the rest of the squad and the two players themselves. Who are obviously going through a very, very difficult time.
Yeah, and it's obviously a delicate issue to deal with, and there's no right or wrong way, but Atalanta have handled themselves really well, and they've shown great support for both players in a time when maybe others would have thrown someone under the bus or kind of shown a cold shoulder.
Yeah, I absolutely second that. And with that, I'm going to come to just completely changing the tone. I'm going to come to my final mention, and it's a dishonorable. It's just fresh off the presses for a Morata challenge entry from Vitesse's Openda in the UEFA Conference League game against Roma. A bit of a defensive mix-up led to a kind of two players on the goalkeeper situation. The ball was crossed to him, and from about 2 yards out, managed to sky it over the bar. So,
phenomenal.
Yeah, went on to lose that game 1-0, obviously, as we mentioned. So, yeah, this is, I think, the second time that we've given a dishonorable mention for a Morata challenge entry for a player that does not play in Italy. So, there you go.
He wanted it so badly that he's like, this is my chance, I'm playing on the Italian side.
Yeah, he heard that there was one up for grabs, and he took that with both hands. Boaz, you are also ending with a dishonorable for someone who doesn't play in Italy.
No, this is I'd like to give an honorable for one of the...
It's an honorable, is it?
I'd like to give an honorable for one of the heroes of Italy's Euro 2020 victory, and that is Jordan Pickford, whose birthday was this week, and thanks for not saving any penalties, and fantastic stuff.
Yeah, and obviously the link being that he was on the other end of Antonio Conte's 5-0 demolition job.
I was actually referring to, yeah, but I was also referring to the Euro 2020 final where where he, he was, fortunately, he didn't stop any penalties.
Right, you just wanted a random piece of gloating there.
Yeah, it's time, you know, it's times like this. With the playoff coming up, it was a good chance to bring it up, and I noticed it was his birthday. Okay. Hopefully we didn't lose any of our English fans who listen to the podcast in this process.
Yeah, I suspect we may have done. But anyway, let's draw a line under it there. That is all we've got time for this week. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening. As ever, please do subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your audio. We'll speak to you again next week. Until then, enjoy the football. Che sta decretando lo scudetto del Milan in questo preciso istante. Finita! La Juventus è campione d'Italia questa data, il 6 maggio. Tutto in anticipo, la Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001. Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia, 16° scudetto.